The Best of Our Knowledge explores topics on learning, education, and research. Coming up, it's summertime and people are flocking to the beach. On today's program, we will talk all about sharks. We will uncover why they are misunderstood and all the important information about the perceived ultra predator. Mondays at 3 on WAMC, anytime as a podcast. This is the Best of Our Knowledge. I'm Madeline Reynolds, in for Lucas Willard. We all know that song, John Williams' theme from Steven Spielberg's 1975 film Jaws. It's the 50th anniversary of the acclaimed film and its portrayal of a bloodthirsty great white. But researchers say shark attacks are rare, and there's a lot of things that are exaggerated about sharks. With bathers flocking to beaches in the Northeast's Atlantic coast, I spoke with Simon Thorold, a senior scientist in the biology department at the Woods Hole Oceanographic Institute in Cape Cod, Massachusetts.
So sharks are a group of fishes that have been around for hundreds of millions of years, and they are characterized by a bunch of different processes. They're actually pretty diverse in terms of their life histories and their forms. So, they run all the way from dogfish, that might be 1 or 2 feet long, up to, whale sharks that, about the size of a school bus. They've got different methods of reproduction, but often they are birthing live sharks. So they're a little different from, say, codfish, which spawn, tiny eggs that grow into cod. Often sharks pup baby sharks that come out swimming. And so they are characterized that they often don't have parental care. So the baby sharks just get released into the ocean and they pretty much have to make their way like that. They've got specialized skin with denticles that, provide a very sleek body form. They can be benthic, they can live on the bottom, they can live on coral reefs, they can live in the open ocean, they can live deep in the ocean. They've really, colonized pretty much every habitat in the ocean. And that's presumably, some function of the length of time that they have been around. So they are really an integral part of ocean life around the globe.
So like you just said, there's many different species. And can you explain the difference geographically about that, the populations? And what do we encounter the most here on the East Coast? Because you're in Woods Hole, right?
I'm in Woods Hole.
Okay.
And so, probably in terms of numbers, the most common species here would be dogfish. So they are, relatively small sharks. But, we have a bunch of sharks. We see this is actually pretty, pretty sharky place. Makos, blue sharks, and, of course, white sharks, which garner a lot of attention here. You go move out into the open ocean, you get more pelagic sharks, oceanic white tips, silky sharks. And then, you get sharks that are characteristic of on coral reefs, gray reef sharks, black tip sharks. The basic sort of ecological niches that sharks fill are reasonably similar around the globe, but there are just, differences in individual species that are utilizing those niches depending on where you are. So yeah, on this coast, the most common shark that you'll probably see, at least up in New England waters, dogfish, but we have that excitement of occasionally being able to see, literally top predators in the ocean in white sharks as well.
And, how do sharks use their senses like sight, smell, and I know they have more, but to help them find food and navigate the ocean, even including the way they hunt?
Yeah, that sort of, I think, is quite dependent on the individual species themselves. And so yes, that we know about sharks have got this incredible sense of smell, but they can also detect changes in the electromagnetic field in the ocean as well. And so there are these amazing photos of these hammerhead sharks, for instance, searching for fish that are actually buried in the sand. And what they can pick up with these sensors is they can actually pick up the electric current that these fish's gills create as water is passing over the gills. So they've got this amazing electrosensory capability as well. They've got decent enough vision. They often, if for instance, we know a number of different shark species are actually sort of ambush predators, and so they are looking up. They're deeper in the water column looking up for silhouettes. And we think that's the way, for instance, that a lot of white sharks hunt, especially marine mammals. And so, they're, again, if you've been around for hundreds of millions of years, that's a long time for evolution to really fine-tune the kind of sensory apparatus that you have. And at least, goes some way just to explain how. Why sharks have been successful for all that time on the planet.
So I think we all know the iconic film Jaws, right? I feel like and we just celebrated its 50th anniversary.
We did.
We did. And I feel like in that film, at least I perceive it as being an over-exaggeration of that predator-esque behavior of a shark. And I am curious, just normally, how do sharks interact with other marine life, including humans?
Well, I think the sharks kind of interact with other animals, in the same way that most predators interact, whether it's, lions in the Serengeti or, tigers in India, especially the big ones. So I guess the thing is that one that, we don't actually have a lot of interactions, right? And that's presumably because the sharks are actually not particularly interested in being around us. And so they typically don't interact with us, even though they could. So yeah, I think that's probably the main take home is that it's not how many interactions, it's actually how few interactions that at least humans have with sharks. So I think that probably goes for the ocean in general that yes, sharks are often predators in the same way that lions are, right? And so they're making a living just like the rest of us. The difference is that in terms of humans that they really actually typically shy away from human interactions, which makes them in some sense mysterious. But I think what we should just be aware of is that mysteriousness is not actually a negative thing. It's actually in some sense a positive thing because it means that they're actually in some sense actively avoiding interacting with us, which is often a good thing.
Yeah, and just kind of on that point and thinking about Jaws and how, few interactions we have with that animal, what are the main causes of shark attacks, knowing that there are, not a ton of them, but you do see it in the news around this time of year. What would you say are the main causes of that? And if you do encounter a shark, is there any tips of safety that you have?
Yeah, so I mean, typically what? There are typically 4 or 5 deaths every year around the entire world, right? From shark interactions. And, on the order of tens of attack of interactions that are not lethal. So yeah, it's a really incredibly small number. Most of those are actually what I would class as misidentification. So they often occur in relatively murky water. They're not attacks as much as the shark is simply testing out what exactly is in the water because it is so murky, right? They can't see necessarily. And the thing about sharks is that they've got mouths with pretty sharp teeth. And so even a relatively inconsequential interaction to the shark can actually have a, you know, it can actually be more problematic for the human. But it's not through any malice. It's simply that we just happen to be in their environment. And you know, sometimes it's literally, you know, that they are literally just checking out what's there. And that I think that's more common. You know, that's happens. And then, and, you know, that we do, we get occasionally there are more serious misidentifications. And again, if you've got a shark as big as a white shark, the implications for that mistake for humans can be quite severe. But again, it's certainly very rare. And it's actually, I would say it's remarkably rare given, you know, given the fact that we know that sharks are in the water at the same time that we're swimming, but they simply don't, you know, they don't often make that mistake.
I'm Madeline Reynolds. If you're just joining us, we're learning all about sharks with Simon Thorold, a senior scientist in the biology department at Woods Hole Oceanographic Institute.
So, you know, you're in Woods Hole on Cape Cod. Can you tell me about how the sharks contribute to the ecosystem in that area and maybe in the surrounding areas as well?
Yeah, they're kind of doing what predators do, right? You know, they are acting as, you know, they're sort of picking off the presumably the slowest swimming, the weaker, the sick animals in that environment. And so in some sense they're keeping those, you know, they help to keep those ecosystems healthy. You know, a healthy ocean will have sharks. I mean, I think, you know, there's no kind of other way to put it. And so yes, they, you know, they having white sharks around the Cape, for instance, will change the behavior of seals, for instance. And so, you know, seals will behave differently when there is no predatory risk from white sharks versus when there is. And so, it's the same for fish as well. So they are actually influencing the behaviors of the ecosystem, one, you know, presumably at least one trophic level below them. You know, they are the, so they're contributing to a healthy ecosystem, but they're also influencing the behaviors of the of their prey while they do it.
So I'm glad you mentioned seals quickly because this has to do with my next question. So
Yeah.
going to the Cape every summer, I've noticed recently, at least for me, I have seen more seals than I ever have before when I was younger, especially along the beach, like right along the coastline. There's like tens or there's, a good amount, and I've a lot more at the pier I've seen. And I'm just wondering if that affects the sharks in any way, because I'm assuming that's a prey to them, or maybe a prime prey for them. But does this affect the shark migration or population anyway along the Cape or near those islands?
Yeah, I mean, we know that the seal population basically sort of has been increasing. Maybe not. It has been in the past, ever since the Marine Mammal Act, Marine Mammal Protection Act was passed, right? It's been increasing exponentially, and maybe it's slowing down a little bit now. But yeah, the seal population's growing, and you know, there is some discussion, I guess, about whether the white sharks, in some sense, returning to the Cape are returning because of the increasing number of seals. So it would be a little bit difficult to prove that, but it's certainly a very, you know, it's certainly a very, it's certainly possible and perhaps even likely that that is the case. And then, right, and then, you know, what you find is then once the white sharks are here, then, you know, their presence does start affecting the seals' behavior as well, right? And so in some sense, really close to the coast may not be a great place for seals to be foraging, but it does give them the opportunity to seek safety on the beach if they do, if there is a white shark in the vicinity. So you know, you may start to see redistribution of the seals that are there once you have a threat from potential threat from white sharks. So you know, it may be a reason why people are seeing more seals closer in, because they're not foraging further offshore, because perhaps further offshore they are actually more vulnerable to predation themselves. You know, again, those are hard questions to definitively answer, because you'd have to literally, change the system somehow and see how the system behaved once you changed it. But it's all certainly very plausible. And certainly the return of white sharks, perhaps the Cape Cod, is almost, it's likely to be a function of the increase of sea as the to the seal numbers that we see.
Just in general, what's kind of the migration flow of sharks along the East Coast, specifically on the Cape and maybe the surrounding islands as well?
Yeah, so a lot of the sharks that are attached to the coast in some sense, so that that they will follow the same migration as the fish, so that or you know so they're basically doing the same thing, right? So they're just following their prey, and so that typically means they do the snowbird thing, overwintering perhaps North Carolina, even down into the South Atlantic, and certainly the white sharks do that, and then they will they you know white sharks come north as the fish move north, and so they'll be here, say May through October, November, before at least some of them, perhaps most of them, will turn around and head back down to waters further south. And that's a pretty common migration strategy for coastal sharks. We also see sharks like makos here, and makos will also be here over the summer, but then rather than sort of go to Florida, they often will hit just they will hit offshore into the Atlantic. Again, we'll be back here the following spring, but a lot of them simply just get out of here in the winter because most of the prey do the same thing. And then white sharks are kind of cool, right? Because occasionally a big female white shark will just do something completely different and just head offshore. And one big female was tracked actually east of the Mid-Atlantic Ridge, so they really can do a big offshore migration. And that behavior is actually much more common on the Pacific coast, where white sharks go from California right out into the middle of the Pacific, even as far as Hawaii. But these large pelagic sharks and white sharks certainly can make oceanic scale movements, even though a lot of times they are attached, they are more sort of coastal, presumably because that's where they can more easily find food.
So, how do you conduct studies on sharks, safely? Maybe kind of thinking about, the migration and population sort of studies. How do you do that?
Yeah, I think it's just it's a little bit different sort of species by species. And some, part of what we've been doing is putting satellite tags on these sharks, and so trying to learn exactly where they are going when they leave us. And so for some sharks that means catching them on a sort of regular hook and line setup and bringing them to the boat and taking blood and putting satellite tags on them and then letting them go. And sometimes, like whale sharks, for instance, it means just getting in the water and attaching tags on in the water. And so, with this particular strategy really depends on what we're trying to do, whether we're trying to get satellite tags on them, whether we want to get tissue biopsies to do genetics, just exactly what we're doing, and then what you can safely do, right? So it wouldn't be particularly safe to try and jump in the water with a white shark to put a tag on. And so, but with a whale shark, it's quite safe and a whole lot of fun.
Can you explain why, putting a tag on a whale shark is safe and fun? Are they just more docile than other shark species?
Well, they're plankton feeders, so they feed
Okay.
on very, small things. And so they have no interest in they don't see us as food, whereas obviously white sharks don't either, but again, a little, a small mistake in identification can have pretty dramatic effects if they get it wrong. So yes, yeah, so we that you know it really just does depend.
I'm Madeline Reynolds. I've been speaking with Simon Thorold, who is a senior scientist at Woods Hole Oceanographic Institute, all about sharks.
What are, you know, the biggest threats facing shark populations today? And is there any way to solve them? And if not, can you just explain?
You know, yes. I mean, I think the, you know, the biggest threats are, is, you know, shark fishing. And so, you know, current estimates would be that every year we're pulling perhaps 80 to 100 million individual sharks out of the ocean every year. And that, you know, they're used for food, but also for shark fins, for shark fin soup. And so, you know, that it's a lot of sharks. And the thing about sharks, which is different, say, from the fish we're more typically eating, like cod, is that, you know, sharks are, don't have the same reproductive strategies, and so they're much more vulnerable to exploitation. And so, you know, a female shark, say a female white shark, might, you know, pup, I don't know, 5 to 10 pups every 2 years. You know, in some sense they're, you know, they're more like, they're, honestly, they're more like whales, they're more like us, that, you know, there simply isn't the same way. Whereas a cod, you know, a single female cod might spawn 2 million eggs in a single spawning episode, right? So if the conditions are just right when she spawns, she can produce a lot of cod very, very quickly. Whereas, you know, sharks simply don't have that same reproductive biology. And so they simply can't take industrial scale fishing the same way that some of our other fish can. You know, there's, you know, there might be some debate as to whether we're taking 50 million or 100 million sharks out, but that really sort of is not really the point. The point at whatever number it is, it's way more than the sharks can, you know, can produce in terms of maintaining the size of their population. So it's, you know, it's tricky. The, you know, there's no question that we're fishing sharks way harder than they can sustain themselves. And so the, you know, almost all shark population, you know, most shark populations are decreasing, and will continue to do so if we continue to take those kind of numbers every year out of the ocean.
I see. So what are the conservation efforts to protect sharks, you know, maybe specifically on the East Coast and around Cape Cod?
Some sharks, you know, a few sharks, white sharks included, have protection. There are protections in place for some species. It's a management problem in the sense that, you know, a lot of sharks are not in one area of management for their whole lives or even the whole year, right? So we may have some protections in place, but if the sharks are then swimming out into the open ocean where there are no protections in place out there, then there's very little that we can do about protecting them there. There are actually a very few protections on most shark species. So we suffer from a lack of data in some sense, and that if we don't know the population sizes, it's really hard to know if that population actually needs protection or not. How would we know that? Then there's a lack of part of knowing whether the population needs protection or not is understanding the demographic rates, the things like how many pups do a sharks produce in a year, how quickly do those pups grow. You know, all those things factor into calculating a sustainable level of harvest, which is the kind of things that we have relatively good at for a lot of fish species, but we simply don't have those same data for sharks. And so it's a case of, you know, simply not being able to make good decisions because we actually don't have the data to base those scientific decision on those kinds of things. So but you know, they suffer from that. They suffer from a lack of data that would allow us to be more proactive in terms of our conservation and management strategies.
What do you find the most fascinating about sharks, and what would you like to study about sharks, maybe specifically in the future?
Ooh, fascinating thing about sharks. I feel like I feel like one fascinating thing I think is just how supremely adapted they are to the environment that they're in. And so that includes a bunch of different things, right? It includes how incredibly energetically they can move through the water. And the senses that they use to navigate in the ocean, like a lot of our work has been, using satellite tags to track where they're going, and they make these quite remarkable migrations, for thousands of kilometers. And so that they do all that. They utilize, when they're doing those migrations, they can dive to, 1,000, even 2,000 meters in the case of whale sharks. So they're making use of the entire ocean, but they're also, doing it in such an efficient way that in some sense it looks simplistic, but it just the underlying adaptations that allow them to do that are amazing. And then, there's something about a shark that if you're in the water with a whale shark, you'll never forget it. It leaves an indelible image on your brain that just gives you a real sense of wonder. And it's the I'm not, here with the white sharks, right? They On the ter in terrestrial environments on land in the U.S., we've lost our predator. Our big predators have been gone for hundreds of years. Whereas in the ocean, those big predators are still there, and they still are amongst us in a way that simply doesn't have a terrestrial environment. So they're such an integral part of keeping even a little bit of the ocean wild.
Simon Thorold is a senior scientist at the Woods Hole Oceanographic Institute. If you'd like to tell the best of our knowledge what you think, send us an email at knowledge@wamc.org. You can listen to the best of our knowledge anytime as a podcast, downloadable wherever you get your podcasts. If you want to catch up on past episodes or hear more WAMC National Productions programs on the news, academic study, books, women's issues, the media, and the environment, visit WAMCpodcasts.org. This has been The Best of Our Knowledge, episode 1817. The Best of Our Knowledge is a national production of WAMC Northeast Public Radio. Thanks to Lucas Willard. The latest on all national productions programs is available via the Airwaves newsletter and our flagship station's website, WAMC.org. Until next time, I'm Madeline Reynolds.